Introduction. All the time I've been writing this book, I've been getting up just after 6 a.m. With one or two companions, I make my way down to the quiet basement shrine room of Majimaloka community where I live. It has been winter and it's cold down there in the morning before the heating comes on in the rest of the house. It's a beautiful room, quite bare and simple. The floor is clear varnished pine. The walls are painted a light ochre. And at the far end, in front of a blazing red silk backdrop, sits a fine bronze statue of the Buddha, made for us by a friend. The cold mists our breath. We light candles and incense, salute the shrine, and take our seats for meditation. Clearing my mind of sleep and dreams, I try to establish some rudimentary concentration and goodwill. Then, relaxing into a sense of gratitude, I conjure up in my mind the refuge tree of the Triratna Buddhist Order, formerly called the Western Buddhist Order. I try to create a mental image, a visualization, of the Buddha Shakyamuni and all the figures, historical, legendary, mythical, and transcendental, who have contributed most significantly to the practice and understanding of Buddhism as we conceive of it in our order. Surrounded by a clear blue sky, five white lotus flowers appear, spreading out from a central stalk. On the middle lotus appear the Buddhas of the three times. On the lotus to their right sit five luminous bodhisattvas, and to their left, five of the Buddha's own enlightened disciples. Behind them are all the canonical Buddhist texts, and on the lotus in front of them is my teacher, Sangharakshita, the founder of the Triratna Buddhist Order, and his teachers. In the sky above the Buddha appear the teachers of the past, from whom Sangharakshita derives most of his teaching. Five of them are connected with Indian Buddhism, four with Tibet, three with China, and four with Japan. Above them appears the five Buddha mandala, and crowning it all, the Adi Buddha Vajrasattva. This is the refuge tree of the Triratna Buddhist Order. Gods and goddesses appear in the sky around the tree, dancing, making offerings and singing its praises, and the whole picture glows with luminous rainbow light. Keeping the tree clearly before us, my companions and I stand up, arrange ourselves in front of the shrine, and begin to prostrate before the tree we have visualized, reciting aloud verses that express our dedication of body, speech, and mind. 20 minutes later, we sit down again, keeping the visualized tree before us, and, having been purified by its beneficent presence, we bring the practice to a close. Well, that is the theory at least. I've never been much of a one for visualization. Clear blue skies tend to elude me. Perhaps I've been living in England too long, and I don't usually see the refuge tree very clearly in my mind's eye. I do, however, sense it in other ways. To begin with, I have an immense gratitude to all the figures on the tree. Through my contact with them, however fleeting and tangential, my life has been changed quite extraordinarily. It has meaning, purpose, and a spiritual orientation that I could never have achieved on my own. Had I not had the good fortune to meet my own teacher, and had he not introduced me in many different ways to the figures on the refuge tree, my life would have been incomparably poorer. Each of the figures on the tree in different ways worked to spread the Buddha's teaching so that it might influence the lives of people, even those like me who have little natural aptitude for it. I bow down to them in thanks for the unremitting effort and constant selflessness their tasks involved. Every figure on the tree, each in their own way, has changed the world for the better. Shakyamuni taught. His disciples taught, and their disciples taught. The great teaching of the Dharma radiated outwards from northeastern India, eventually to encompass the whole of Asia. Half the world's people live in countries that have been deeply affected by it. About 150 years ago, it began to affect Western cultures as well, and has continued to do so with increasing effect. The work of these figures has changed the mind of humanity for the better, and I am grateful for that. The work they did now leaves its traces in our consciousness. The way we think and act in the world today is, in part at least, a result of their efforts. To that extent, they live with us in the present, influencing the way we act, speak, think, and feel. They are a constant source of beneficence in the present. The historical figures have clearly left their traces on world culture. The archetypal figures, however, affect us in different ways. To me, they express different facets of the highest potential of the mind, and wherever a wise or kind act is done, there, to some extent at least, we can see their work. They too, therefore, are constantly with us. I have encountered all the different figures on the tree in different ways at different times. I currently have the great good fortune to live with Sangharakshita, and I once met Dado Rinpoche in Kalimpong. I have studied texts written by several of the figures on the tree, and I have performed the visualization practice and mantra recitation of four of the archetypal figures for many years. All of that makes for a close sense of connection. As I've been writing this book, that sense of connection has grown and deepened, and my admiration for each of the figures has increased as I have come to learn more about them. There's Yogi Chen, I think to myself as he takes his place in my morning meditation. What a man he was! There's Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. He was so kind. There's the Arahant, Dharmadina. Imagine receiving a teaching from her. I don't necessarily see these figures, but I have some kind of mental image of all of them. Feelings, impressions, thoughts, memories, all of these go into making up my visualization of the tree. I have been doing this practice all through this winter, but I've done it at other times as well. I last did it when I was writing my previous book, in a solitary retreat cottage in southwest England, just a few miles from the sea. It was an idyllic spot, a small isolated cottage on a dairy farm run by a friendly, nature-loving couple. There were two rooms, one up, one down, and I had with me all that I needed. Sufficient food and clothing, my computer and printer, my meditation gear, and binoculars for the wildlife. I even had my trusty old office chair that is so kind to my back as I hunch over the keyboard. I was all set and the book was going well, but somehow I could not settle. It just didn't feel the right place for me. There were deer in the woods and badgers in the banks, foxes, squirrels and rabbits. There were newts in the pond, brilliant dragonflies and all kinds of wild flowers and birds. A fine spot, but I could not settle. I had a constant sense of being somewhat out of place. Nowhere I sat, nowhere I stood, felt altogether right. Why could I not settle? And then, out of nowhere, I suddenly knew what I had to do. I took up the going for refuge and prostration practice, and like magic, it all became clear. That was my place, at the foot of the refuge tree. That is where I really belong. That feeling has continued and strengthened as I've worked through this winter. The practice has the effect on me, to borrow a phrase from a friend, that a magnet has on iron filings. It points everything in the right direction and aligns all the kinks and quirks of my wayward mind. I hope this book will encourage those who are qualified to do so to take up this practice. It's open to all members of the Triratna Buddhist Order and to those who have requested ordination within it, though we ask that the latter take it up only under the guidance of a member of one of the ordination teams. But I have not written this book only for those who might take up the practice. This book is also for those who have any interest in the Order and the Triratna Buddhist community. It shows, I hope, where some of our chief doctrines come from and how we fit into the scheme of Buddhism as a whole. The refuge tree is a symbol of the heart essence of the Triratna Buddhist community. It is what we are most deeply about. I hope this book will serve as something of an introduction to the 44 figures who between them make up the refuge tree. If I have managed to communicate even a little of the extraordinary spiritual stature of one or two of them, I will have gone a little way in repaying the enormous debt I owe to each of them. That's the end of the introduction.